As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelluk, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and everything is okay in Mudville or whateverville in Leaf Nation as a 4-0 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Buffalo Sabres. So a much better spirited couple of hours we'll have, Ozzie, as it was, you know, justifiably gloom and doom, particularly about the home games of late. I know the expression I'm looking for. Just what the doctor ordered is what we're saying, Mark Osborne, as far as it went tonight. And of course, shots on goal. Another story, only 10 shots against the Toronto Maple Leafs gave up. So we'll talk about those storylines. Talk to many of the individuals involved in a great night. Well, I say a great night. It was a little bit early. As we walked to the subway and we chat about it. Maybe we left a little. No, we wouldn't leave early. We'd stay there and watch it and watch the banner be unfurled and all that.
Yeah, you know what, Gord? I think it's a case of being a little bit relieved. You know, we wondered, you know, earlier through this game whether or not it would be a lucky bounce perhaps for the Buffalo Sabres. Leafs, you know, clearly the better team, you know, through at least 30 minutes of play. I mean, they were outplaying the Sabres, you know, ad nauseum. And, you know, finally Tyler Bozak near the end of the second period was able to put the Leafs up 1-0. And then after that, in the third period, the floodgates really did open for the Maple Leafs. And I kind of wondered as we watched this game whether this was the team that Teddy Nolan described was like we couldn't beat a peewee team a number of weeks ago, right? When Anaheim came in and totally dominated in Buffalo, or was it going to be the team who actually upset San Jose on Saturday afternoon in San Jose? We weren't sure who we were going to see, but I think we saw the earlier rather than the team that won in San Jose.
Well, it's a team record for the Maple Leafs. Fewest shots against in a game. You go back to 11 shots back in 1955. So been a long time coming, and only 10 shots against this time around. And you look at the you look at it as far as the Leafs go. And as you say, early on, you've been in a lot of those games when things aren't going right, and you're dominating them, but the other team does get that first goal. I mean, yeah. that would have been, I would say, the killer, but it just seemed there was an element of that had that kind of flow to it.
Well, you know what? I remember these games in particular during the expansion years. And when we're talking about the Ottawa Senators or the Tampa Bay Lightning, that was the feeling that we often did get is you were clearly outplaying the opponent and a lucky bounce. And all of a sudden, you know, you're feeling a little bit of the heat. Sticks get a little bit tighter. They feel a little bit of momentum on their side because it's basically you have everything to lose. They have nothing to lose and everything to gain. And that was, I think, the case, you know, for the Buffalo Sabres coming into tonight's game when the Maple Leafs, let's face it, they've been under a lot of scrutiny. Their home record has not been good thus far. And yet they did prevail. They were really skating well and looked as though they were just two completely different hockey clubs for the better part of this hockey game.
Well, in the case of the Buffalo Sabres, when you're a team, and a lot of the teams in the earlier part of the 1980s for the Maple Leafs, just before you arrived, I could identify with them. And when you get a big win like you got in San Jose, that's one, not that you live off it forever, but it's every now and then you want to get one of those and you get one on the road. Because when you come back from that long trip, it's tough, and this wasn't the same. This was more the team, like you say, that Ted Nolan compared to a peewee team after the Anaheim game compared to the one that played so well in San Jose.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Cody Hodgson earlier this morning, and they played on Saturday afternoon in San Jose. And every time you've got to come back home, the Sabres went back home. They traveled to Toronto yesterday, and yeah, it's still part of this road trip, and they've been on the road, you know, quite a bit this season in this early going. And yet, you know, the time change and everything that goes with all of that, it's really hard to get your feet underneath you in that first game back. And, you know, we obviously saw that Buffalo was the team that was just not able to keep up with the Maple Leafs. And, you know, with all the line changes that Randy Carlyle had, you know, made for tonight, breaking up the top line, it really seemed that two guys in particular for me, Gord, were really engaged for the good part of the hockey game, certainly early. Was Joffrey Lupul, who had 7 shots after 2 periods, mm-hmm. and Nazem Kadri. And And rightly so, Joffrey Leupel having Phil Kessel on his right side, like go back before the JVR days. I mean, yep. That was your line. And, you know, Joffrey Leupel's been trying to find a winger to play with. He hasn't had one. And so it was, you know, coincidental. And yet, you know, the feeling when all of a sudden you have another good player on your line, that energizes you.
Gord Stelly, Mark Osborne, Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. A big 4-0 shutout victory for Jonathan Bernier and the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Buffalo Sabres. By the way, earlier, okay, so they kept the Buffalo Sabres to 10 shots against the previous low for the Maple Leafs. I said was 11, was actually 13 back in 1955 and 1975. So three shots, usually just you kind of chip away at that one shot at a time. But this time, that's a pretty big differential and a pretty... Yeah, wow, that's, you know, I, and again, to go back, I want to talk about the Sabres a little bit later on about their challenges and what have you. For the Maple Leafs, off the hop tonight, what was it about the two lines that that you liked the mixing up in that? I mean, that, you know, it was still the big guns that got it. They didn't score on a power play. They didn't score on a two-man advantage. So they were getting a lot of chances, a lot of shots. Was Neuvirth playing that well? Or when did they start clicking?
Oh, absolutely. Neuvirth was standing on his head for the better part of the entire hockey game, you know, until Tyler Bozak made it 1-0 on a tremendous shot, which happened to be on the power play, which broke an 0-for-23 drought that the Maple Leafs have been on the last five hockey games. But, yeah, for whatever reason, sometimes, Gord, changing your lines up around a little bit does infuse a bit of energy and... I've already mentioned it, you know, two guys in particular. When Kadri and Leupel, who have been playing together for the best part of this year, get Kessel on their line, that was just, those two guys, I think, were a lot more engaged. And then you look at Bozak and JVR, they had David Clarkson. You know, Clarkson has been a pretty consistent hockey player. You know, I watched Tyler Bozak. I'm not sure he was pleased about that, you know, to go away from his buddy. And they were a little bit quiet until, you know, Bozak scores on the power play and then JVR gets a, you know, a nice backdoor play in the third period. But for the most part, that top line with Leupel, Kadri, and Kessel were your dominant line.
Well, how about the cherry on the sundae? I'm not sure how Santarelli got on with Kessel, but he made that pass and Phil Kessel behind the net. Mm-hmm. Had nowhere to go because Santarelli was 70 feet away and he was the closest Leaf. So he banked it off Neuvirth. Being quick.
Definitely a design play. And I think what happened, Gord, is he looked and said, I have Komarov and I have Santarelli. I think I have a better chance of scoring if I just go ahead and try to bank it in rather than try to find one of those lugs.
Off the side pocket. Yeah. You know, it's funny with Michael Neuvirth. I was saying today, this morning, with the Buffalo Sabres in town, all I can remember, and you were there, maybe you weren't there, but just Dominik Hasek for so many years, Ryan Miller for so many years, back when the Leafs lost to the Buffalo Sabres in the conference final a number of years ago when Hasek couldn't play the first game, so that was considered a break, a Sunday afternoon playoff game. Dwayne Roloson played the game of his life. I mean, it's always been Buffalo goaltenders that have been the difference, and certainly Ryan Miller being gone is a big change that way. Now, you mentioned Neuvirth tonight. Played really, really well, but it's not the same kind of Sabre team that was in front of a great Ryan Miller. This is going to be a tough one for any goaltender.
No, you know, and you talk to Dan Natalivi, who does broadcast for the Buffalo Sabres. These two goaltenders in Enroth and Neuvirth for the better part of this season have kept the Sabres in hockey games. I mean, the dramatic disparity amongst, you know, shots from game in and game out. I mean, their save percentage as a team is pretty good. It's it's not too bad. I mean, it's like .915, which... You know, for a team that, you know, is a bottom feeder, that's pretty good statistics as far as goaltending goes. But, yeah, you mentioned the same thing. Weren't the Leafs, as far as goaltending, accustomed to great goaltending for a long time with Felix Potvin, Curtis Joseph, Eddie Belfort, and then we get Ray Kraft, Vesa Toskala, right? And so it's been... You know, so now you know what the Sabres are probably going to go through with these two guys.
Well, a couple of, like looking at tonight's game again, it's 4-0. This is so the opposite. It was 4-1 Saturday, the Boston-Toronto game, and this is the 4-0 win. So many positives to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight, their victory over the Buffalo Sabres. Fourth line, there was, we'll grab the minutes in that. We'll get some of the stats later on and grab that as far as we figure it out. But they had one shift in particular where they really got hemmed in. You know, Holland. And
panic,
and is a ponic. And
there was panic.
Yeah, and Fratton. Yes. As far, let me take a quick look how long they got by and large. So Matt Fratton back in the lineup. They got 8 minutes 21 seconds. So they probably got some time in the third period that way. But Peter Holland got 11 minutes 6 seconds. He was key when it was nothing. Him and JVR killing off that penalty, and they almost had like a 2-man breakaway. He got tripped, and if he had possession of the puck, it would have been a penalty shot. But then JVR just came cruising up and had the breakaway where Neuvirth came up with a big save to preserve the 0-0 score at that time.
Yeah, and you know, lucky for Neuvirth because JVR clearly beat him. It hits the post and comes back and hits Neuvirth in the backside, and just was starting to trickle towards the line. One of the Sabre defenders came and helped make sure it did stay out and kept the Leafs off of the scoreboard. But you're exactly right. I was laughing at that Mazaros penalty that he took because it was in between center and the Leaf blue line when he hooked Peter Holland, who, you know, gave a real good effort on that PK. And, you know, interesting enough, Gord, we've seen Peter Holland, play pretty well penalty killing, for a fourth line guy where, he's an offensive guy. He proved it in junior, proved it at the American League level. And now, again, an adjustment period for him, but at least he's getting a bit of PK time and doing quite well at it.
You know, it's interesting that I heard Joe Bowen talk about the pregame show, as well, talking about the fourth line. And as he said, fourth line really doesn't matter if your first two lines aren't going. I'm more concerned about that. And you and I totally agree with that. But it has been a topic, and I can't stand seven defensemen. We've gone over that many times. It seems like with Stuart Percy being sent back to the Marlies, you wonder if Dave Nonis and Brendan Shanahan, if that, you know, maybe that was kind of the message. They kind of took away that trump card. They let Randy Carlyle play who he wants to play, but they also said, okay, you're not going to have seven defensemen anymore.
Yeah, which is okay in some respects. I mean, we look at Stuart Percy and think that, I mean, his game was almost, he wasn't that visible anymore just because of the 7D. You know, it's almost like it's not his fault, and yet the convenience of being able to send Stuart Percy down. I know it's nickeling and diming in some respects, right, Gord? But we're seeing what's happening with LA, and they're right up against the cap.
Yeah.
So this still is a bit of a cap savings for the Maple Leafs because right now what are you you're resting or you're not dressing two healthy guys in your lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct with that? Or maybe it's only one right now.
It's it's only one right
it's
now.
It's only one.
It's only so one right
only,
now.
Only Carter Ashton is your only healthy scratch.
And the LA Kings are talking about playing one player short. I mean, they don't have any healthy extra guys. But the other part in Percy's case, let's face it, you want him to play. I mean, you just absolutely want him to play. So if he's going to play for the Toronto Marlies, that's where you want him to go. But I did wonder, you know, there's a little bit of the cap on it, but I also, actually switching subjects again, is it not? I mean, everyone just seems convinced Sam Reinhart shouldn't stay up. I mean, we talk about positive situations, and it looks like Leon Draisaitl is going to stay with the Edmonton Oilers. Last year, Monahan staying with the Calgary Flames. I mean, these were guys that seemed to be doing well or struggling at times, but in positive NHL situations. I mean, there's no point. I'm trying to see how many games he's got here.
Well,
so he can play nine. I mean, do you keep him up, seriously?
You know what? I watched him carefully tonight, and for a guy that played 12 minutes and 41 seconds, I mean, for me, Gord, his skating is not good enough yet. He's not strong enough yet. And so what's the point of having him play here? You know, the only reason you would think is that, is he that much better? Is Junior just, is he past Junior already? I mean, that would be the only argument, because he'll go back and play World Juniors and do all that kind of stuff and maybe get traded to a decent team. I don't even know if he's on a decent team. I haven't checked my WHL standings. But, you know, again, it's like there wasn't anything that he did for me tonight or any of the few Sabres games that I've seen that would warrant, wow, he's playing well and he should stay, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, Monahan last year in Calgary, I mean, he was scoring goals.
Yeah.
Like, wow, this kid's impressive. He seen Monahan like he was big enough and strong enough and skated well enough to justify staying the entire season.
Well, and Calgary, to talk about, you know, Monahan in one sense, but also Sven Varchi, who they drafted the year before. He came up and was a phenom when he got called up from junior. But then last year, Brian Burke called him out. You know, and so it's the kind of thing, it's not just, teams have to look at why some guys can assimilate to it, get acclimated to it, and it seems like those guys can, and the ones that can. And, you know, you weren't around when we did it too often with the Maple Leafs, and they still did it later in the 90s with Jeff Ware for a little bit and some other guys that, you know, stayed up a little bit that really shouldn't have been up, I think. And in this case, and I got to think Tim Murray, he's got, you know, it seems the Buffalo Sabres have bought into the plan. Terry Pegula, when he first got on board, he was telling the general manager, go out, and it was Darcy Regier, and they became the highest spending team. But it was Ville Leino, and it was Christian Ehrhoff, and it was Robin Regier. I mean, I'm not denigrating those guys, but he overpaid for all of them just to prove a point, and it wasn't the way to go about it.
Yeah, and so what's your point right now? I mean,
the point the other way is, and again, talking to Dan Dunleavy and everyone else around the organization, Terry Pegula thought it was important to show that they weren't going to be a cash-strapped team, that they would pay where they lost years ago, Drury, and they lost, you know, Briere, guys like that.
Right.
Wouldn't happen now. But they're not the same team. They have to rebuild. And I think people have bought into the plan. He's got two first-round picks, being the Islanders as well, and other moves like that. And they've bought into, okay, this is going to take a couple of years to get back on track. But Tim Murray's going about it the right way. And when you need to add guys, we have an owner now who's unafraid to open the wallet. I mean, it's like when Mike Gillich took over the Red Wings around when you were playing, and he went after Ray Stazak and Adam Owen, like all those guys. Whatever it was, they would go after it. But you can't just do it that way. You have to get drafts and other things.
I know, but if we go back to the players that you mentioned, you know, you're talking about Ehrhoff, Robin Regier, and I thought at that time those were good additions to the Buffalo Sabres. You know, Ville Leino as well. I mean, wonderful playoff with Philadelphia. I mean, he looked like a real good fit in Philly, and then all of a sudden got all that money and the wheels just, you know, came off. And yeah, instead of it being an improvement to their team, it actually went the other way, which was very surprising because I think we're all feeling for Terry Pegula that this would be a positive thing because of all the money he invested in this team.
The only thing is, that wasn't money well spent in the cap era. If it wasn't the cap era, it wouldn't matter so much. I mean, they, as additions, I can't argue with you, but if you're overpaid and if you overpay for them, then that's not good because
usually you are overpaying. I mean, look at what the Maple Leafs have done overpaying. Where do you want me to begin over the last 4 or 5 years? Mike Komisarek, Mr. Connolly, David Clarkson.
David Clarkson, the jury can still be out now. Okay. I don't like the term on it. You're right. You don't.
Guy playing on the third line, getting over five and change.
As I said, the jury is still out. I mean, it's going to be deliberating.
This isn't
for
anything personal. And I like David Clarkson as a player, but it's a lot of ching ching.
Okay. So let's just talk about it in general then. We're talking about, okay, well, Tim Connolly was another one. I didn't mind Tim Connolly's term because it was just 2 years. But again, you don't get to see.
It was only 2 years. Yeah, four and a half for 2 years, $9 million.
Each and every, almost without exception, was Jason Allison. I mean, you go back, you know, Eric Lindros. Like, you go back, and the free agent signings just don't generally deliver the bang because people expect Jason Blake. I mean, you know, it goes on and on and on what people are expecting. And either A, they can't live up to it in many cases, or B, you've got to have things in place like the Los Angeles Kings do and then get a Marian Gaborik as an add-on rather than, you know, even this year, Roman Pollock, Stefan Robida. They're basically journeyman defensemen. I mean, they are, you know, and they could be positive additions and they could help solidify a team concept on D, but they're not stars.
So the case in point is, how many teams or what kind of player are you going to get that hasn't yet reached 25 years of age, that hasn't been signed long-term to their own individual team? So you're basically getting guys that, they might be able to help you, they might not be able to, and you're still paying a premium for those type of players to help you, I don't know, solidify your team or change a little bit of the look of your team. I mean, that's what the Leafs did this year with their third and fourth bottom guys, right? I mean, that's all they did. You know, Gunnarsson for Roman Pollock. I mean, based on what we've seen, I mean, is Gunnarsson a better defenseman for you? or is Roman Pollock or Pollock?
Well, with both guys.
Or Sam Pollock. But you know what I mean.
The best of Carl Gunnarsson is different than what I saw a lot last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's probably the whole difference is these guys are not stud defensemen. Otherwise, they'd be re-signed to their respective teams. I mean, you look at, let's take the Chicago Blackhawks, for example. You know, you start off Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Patrick Sharp, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, you know, a few others. They're all drafts. That's where it starts from. And then you plunk in the other guys and the Christopher Stiegs of the world and Dustin Byfuglien. They can move all over the place. Mm-hmm. Those core guys are your own. And the best investment like Anaheim did with Getzlaff and Perry is then you re-sign your own to long-term contracts.
By the way, Patrick Sharp and Hossa were not your very own.
Philadelphia, you're right.
Make you know that. So they were able to, you know, pull the rabbit out of their back pocket with Patrick Sharp. Let's face it. He turned out to be an unbelievable player, and Chicago can thank Rick Dudley for that because he was the one who brought Patrick Sharp to Chicago.
Okay, I guess to clarify, it's kind of like in some ways it's like the Leafs with Kessel and JVR. Even though they started somewhere else, when they're young, they're kind of like your guys. So you're right. I stand corrected, but it's also getting guys that are still, you know, youthful and in their prime rather than unrestricted free agents. We're going to have to take a break, come back. We will have Randy Carlyle live. It should be a very upbeat Randy Carlyle with the Toronto Maple Leafs this time. We'll come back to more of Leafs Nation, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Stewart carrying to center. In across the line, broken up there, and right back comes Kessel. He's across the line with Kadri. Kadri's in a goal!
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back. Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A fun night at Air Canada Center. 4-0 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres held to just 10 shots on goal. That's a Leaf team record. The old record was 13 for fewest shots against in a game. 37-10 were the overall shots on goal. And Ozzy, maybe we'll review the goals again. We have Randy Carlyle at some point. We'll cut and go live to him if we get him. But we talked about the Leafs dominating the Sabres. And then it wasn't until 50 seconds left in the second period. It also ended the power play drought for the Maple Leafs. Bozak is fourth from Kessel and Morgan Rielly.
Yeah, and thank goodness, because that was a sigh of relief. Can you imagine going into the third period and the Sabres having a chance and a lucky bounce here or there? I mean, it was tense for a moment, and yet that goal seemed to ignite the Maple Leafs.
Then Leafs came back out of the third period, and three goals in a span of about 5 minutes, and that's really the way the game was going all game. You should have thought that would happen in the first period. It didn't. You've got Kessel, his fifth of the year from Santarelli. And that was the one that Santarelli cleared up behind the net. As you say, Phil Kessel looked out. There was nobody close. There were no goal scorers close. So he took his chance and just banked it up off the Buffalo goalie.
Yeah, why don't you just say there was Santarelli out there with Komarov, and Phil decided to go with the percentages and try to bank it off his pads and in. And he was very successful. Okay. By the way, JVR scores a minute later to make it 3-0.
Okay, so here Morgan Rielly and Bozak, Tyler Bozak at the podium.
You got to make changes. Our team wasn't playing very well as a group, so changes are to be made. And I thought they played well as a line, and I thought our line, you know, sustained a lot of zone time too and played pretty well. So it was nice to, you know, have a full team effort tonight.
Morgan, what's going through your mind when the game is, you know, you're dominating possession, you're out shooting them, but it stays 0-0 for it seems like the longest time?
I think you just got to keep it going. You know, it was a close game for a while there, and just a good team game. You know, keep playing well, keep skating hard, keep trying to create chances and just keep with it. And, you know, if you keep going, chances will keep coming and, you know, just got to bury one and then just keep going from there.
Tyler, on a night where third goaltender was really playing well, what did you see on the breakaway?
I mean, I just saw a little opening in the bottom corner and, I mean, luckily it went in. Phil made a great play to me and I was able to walk in all alone, so... I mean, it was nice to get one by him. He played pretty well at the start of the game. I thought we had a lot of chances as a team, and I think it kind of opened up a bit for us after that.
Tyler, does it get a bit nerve-wracking when you're out shooting a team so drastically and it's still 0-0?
I mean, not tonight. I think, you know, it was a game where we needed to play a lot better, and we felt confident after the first period of how we were playing, and knew we just needed to keep playing like that, and eventually, you know, one was going to go in for us.
Guys, what are the difference one night to the next? The flash performance Saturday, a great performance tonight. What's the difference either emotionally or physically or mentally for you guys when you take the ice?
You know, I think tonight, I think we all knew that we had to play a good team game. You know, we had to bounce back. We're not happy with how we played two games ago. You know, so we had the confidence and, you know, I thought, you know, quick start helps always. You know, I thought we played well all night though. You know, got chances, but we knew that, you know, we had to kind of turn it around a little bit and, you know, start playing our game. And, you know, I think we're able to do that here tonight.
Thanks, guys.
Just watch your step. We don't want star players injured. Morgan Riley, Tyler Bozak, the star players tonight. 4-0 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Buffalo Sabres. Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stellick. Mark Osborne on Sportsnet, 590 The Fan. And just to look at their nights before we look at the goals again. So Tyler Bozak, and he talked about, said he was happy about both lines. So he had one goal, one assist, plus one, played 18 minutes. Morgan Riley, two assists, plus one. 22 minutes, 27 seconds. So they were two of the big contributors, Ozzy.
Yeah, they really were, Gord and Morgan Riley, with a nice backdoor feed to JVR. And interesting enough, you know, Bozak gets the power play goal from Kessel. Kessel scores from Santarelli. And then JVR gets a pass from Riley. So it was like all three of those guys scored a goal. And yet, you know, it was all different. It wasn't what you expected of them, you know, being broken up.
Here's Randy Carlo, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Randy, the players and you have said you wanted a performance to be proud of. Clearly, you know, mission accomplished there. What do you take from this game?
Well, again, it's one where, you know, the message is now that you've been able to prove to us that you can play a game that we needed to play, that we have to play, a style that we have to play with the commitment to the little things in the game, that now our expectations are to carry that on to the next one. And for us to recognize that there are certain things that we've been doing out there that were much big or a drastic difference tonight than what we were on Saturday night and the night before that. So again, it's just a recognition of how hard it is and how easy it can be if we stick to a game plan. Now, the easy part is because we were able to do it one night, doesn't mean the next night's going to be easy. You know, we know that we're going to have to play as we go forward to a higher level than we did tonight. It just, tonight everything fell our way, and we'll take it because we were in drastic need of a performance at home.
Is there a nervous time in that game when you're absolutely dominating but not scoring?
Oh, for sure. When it's nothing, and I think we had our 27th shot before we scored. So those are nervous times because you know that sometimes fate in sports comes and bites you the wrong way, and that was what we were worried about. You'll question that all the time.
They talked about being smarter with the puck. Is that something you stressed?
Well, we stress that. Believe me, it's not the first time we've stressed it. You know, this is game, nine for us? Eight, nine? You know, and we've stressed that right from the beginning of the year, but it just seemed that in some of the situations that we've been in, that we haven't committed ourselves or haven't committed to what the team needs you to do to have success.
Did you like the new
line
combination?
Yes.
You think that worked?
Yeah, I think it... You know, for some, looking at it, offensive zone time and shots and the way our club played it, you know, I thought the line combinations were a bonus. You know, it was Bozak scored, Van Riemsdyk scored. You know, they were, you know, opportunistic. Phil scored, you know, a goal scorer's goal from behind the net. You know, that's the kind of stuff that you look for, and you need that. We need that in the situation that we're in.
You see a step forward for the power play?
Well, we had lots of offensive zone time. I still don't think we shot the puck enough. I think that we vacated the front of the net when we had opportunities to shoot the puck, and we never see a lot of pucks on the power play. And it'll be something we'll continue to work on. And as I stated, I think it was this morning, talking about the power play, that we have four staples like everybody else does too, and that we have to establish that shot. You have to have net presence, you have to have puck recovery, and our work ethic has to be one where you're going to outwork the penalty killing unit you're playing against.
Was Dion okay out there, that collision there?
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised that he didn't have any, he wasn't any worse for wear. Little bit of a pop in his hip, and he was right back. It looked a lot worse, to tell you the truth. On the replay, when I saw it in between periods, I said, holy crow, what's this?
Thanks, Coach.
All right.
Guys, 11 a.m.
Well, that's it. Randy Carlisle, head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, kind of short and sweet tonight. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne, back at you. Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, the 4-0 win. We've kind of been going all over the place talking about the goals and that. We'll get back to those. And now the Leafs PR has now said the Leafs also allowed 10 shots against Ottawa on January 5th, 2002. So this will tie the record, the team record for fewest shots against. I mean, either way, it's just an impressive effort by the Toronto Maple Leafs and also indicative of a struggling Buffalo Sabre team.
Yeah, on both points, Gord, it was much needed. It's relief. It's a lot of the things that Randy talked about that this team needed to do. They needed to move their feet. They needed to engage. They needed to play with energy, and I thought they did that for the most part. Now, for me, a vote and a voice of caution that this was only the Buffalo Sabres.
Yes.
A team that's going to be a bottom feeder. They're going to be in the Connor McDavid sweepstakes. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And now, what's been happening to this team in this early going part of this season? You play a good game, and then you lay a massive egg. And who do you have coming in? Well, you got Chicago on Saturday, but you're going into Columbus, which I guess maybe they've played well on the road. So maybe it's not about laying an egg. I was thinking they were playing Chicago first, but no, they're going to Columbus on Friday.
Well, we'll find out about the too many eggs in one basket, whatever. I mean, Randy Carlisle decided to spread that out over the two lines. And just life in general, our man Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, joining us. And Chris, just what Ozzy was saying about, you know, impressive Leaf effort, but also, and not to, you know, not to denigrate it at all, but this Buffalo Sabre team isn't very good. Okay, we'll try to connect with Chris in a second. Just connecting Chris Johnson down there. We got Chris, do we have you now? Chris, we got you? Okay, we'll try to get Chris in a second. We'll get him to call back on that. We're talking about the Leafs and the Buffalo Sabres tonight. Again, when we looked at it, boy, all these stats coming up and what's going on. And
well, Gord, I'm here from the Air Canada Centre, and I wouldn't say the Sabres aren't that bad of a team.
Is that, that's not a very good Chris Johnson impersonation.
No, it isn't.
You know, the funny thing is, and you mentioned the third goal. We were just talking about those three goals 2, 3, and 4 in a 5-minute span. And JVR from Riley and Bozak. And then Jake Gardner, boy, did he ever do the wraparound dipsy doodle entertaining one, his first of the year from Winnick and Komarov. And like I said, that was the 9:17 mark. So from 4:18 to 9:17. Just under 5 minutes, there were three goals over that period.
Let's tell our listening audience that not only did Gord Miller of TSN say, "What are you doing? What are you doing? Holding on to the puck too long." Joe Bowen said the same thing on the radio. And whoa, what a great move by Jake Gardner.
Good celebration as well by Jake Gardner after that as well. So putting that in. So, and again, we're chit-chatting a bit as we try to connect with Chris Johnson, our usual guest, and find out what the skinny is going on there. But about a Buffalo Sabre team that, you know, their power play as well. They bring Brian Trotsche in as an assistant coach. And, you know, I think too often coaches, you know, Brian Trotsche can't go out there as a Hart Trophy player anymore and make a difference that way. But I know Dan Dunleavy said he spent one game in the press box rather than behind the bench and was just trying to get a look at a power play that can't seem to score any goals. Gave up a glorious shorthanded opportunity to the Leafs and has given up a shorthanded goal along the way this season.
Well, you know what? With all due respect to Trotz, he's a great guy, but being out of the league for 4 or 5 years probably has not helped the power play, you know, for the Buffalo Sabres. And Gord, what? Coming into tonight's hockey game, the Sabres were 0-for-30 on the power play. So both them and Minnesota have yet to score a power play goal.
Okay, we have you this time, Chris.
Yep, I'm here, guys.
Okay, thanks for persevering with us. We're trying to balance, taking nothing away from the Leaf effort tonight. So talk about the effort, but also a Buffalo Sabre team, let's face it, was a pretty poor team tonight.
Well, you know, that's got to be one of the worst teams we've seen in a long time. You know, I don't say that based just on tonight's effort, but the way they started this season. And you know, I almost feel bad for the guys, to be honest. I went in to the Sabres room, and there's a lot of frustration there. Obviously, you know, a lot of guys on that roster endured plenty of losing last season, and it doesn't look very good, you know, for them now. And you know, you have to think they're not as bad as they were tonight. I mean, you don't see 10 shots for an NHL team very often over a game, and that, in fact, set a new record for the lowest in Sabres franchise history. So, you know, for them, it's a game to move on from, but, you know, good timing, I think, for the Leafs, given, you know, the atmosphere around here to get one of these under their belt, maybe get a little bit more confident as they go into back-to-backs this weekend.
Well, Chris, I think the timing was everything for the Maple Leafs. Randy Carlyle electing to shuffle his lines around a little bit. Kadri had Lupul and Kessel and Bozak, JVR and Clarkson. And I know for myself, certainly in the early part of the game, it looked as though both Kadri and Lupul were really engaged, skating well, creating. I think Joffrey Lupul had 7 shots through 2 periods of play. It was seemed to be the magic potion that Randy Carlyle pulled off with the line combinations.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to blame them. I mean, obviously getting Phil Kessel on your wing is an encouraging sign. You know that not only can he score goals, but obviously set up some chances. And in fact, in that first period, he had Kadri in sort of half alone and Lupul both on similar-looking plays where he found those guys in stride to the zone. And you know, I agree with you. I thought that tonight those line changes did pay dividends. They did work, and I would imagine we'll see them go forward at least another game, just because you know everyone that was kind of impacted by it produced tonight. I mean, if Bozak and James Van Riemsdyk both scored goals, and obviously Kessel got that one from behind the net as well. So you know, it was a good night for those guys that have to be scoring. And you know, I think that there's, you know, some of them feeling a lot of pressure, especially the Kadris and Lupuls haven't produced a lot. And you know, even though they didn't really, put one in tonight, I just think playing with Kessel, they know that they're going to get their opportunities.
Well, you know, the other thing, the number of things they talked about tonight, Dion Phaneuf and Randy Carlyle alluded to it looked a lot more serious. And some people thought maybe it was like Evander Kane, where a teammate fell on him with more severe results. Phaneuf did come back, which was good news. He wasn't playing a ton of minutes, though, before that. It seems like, and I'm not trying to dump on Dion at a time when they won a big game, but it seemed like Randy Carlyle had guys like Jake Gardner and others that he thought earned the more minutes, where usually it's Dion that, through thick and thin, has got the most minutes.
Sure. You know what? One thing that stood out to me and Ozzie, we were sitting together in the press box, was obviously Dion wasn't going down to the top power play unit. They had Gardner and Franzen playing there. And, you know, I wonder if, you know, at 5-on-5, some of that might have been, you know, recognizing the kind of game it was going to be in and became, and maybe trying to spread things around a little bit. I still think this is a team that's trying to get, you know, some confidence for Jake Gardner. And we saw in the way that he celebrated his goal, his first goal of the year, that you know, offensively, I still think this guy has a lot more to give. And, you know, he's been criticized and scrutinized so much. And I think in some ways that's kind of hurt him a little bit. I wonder if sometimes he's almost paralyzed by the fear of making a mistake. But, you know, maybe this was a chance, I would think, for Randy Carlyle to play him more and get his confidence up. And, you know, that goes for a lot of guys on the ice. I mean, this was the sort of night I think everyone in a Leaf sweater could enjoy, because, you know, the Sabres, you know, not only were they not generating any dangerous scoring chances, they almost had no, you know, time in the Leafs zone. And you know, the Leafs, you know, as a result, were able to build on that. And I think when you looked at the end of the night and see Jake Gardner play 23 minutes and did so successfully, he's got to be feeling pretty good driving home from the rink, tonight.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question for you, Chris, was, Jake Gardner, obviously the third period goal for Jake, his first of the season, pretty expressive for a goal that was basically, the game was out of reach at that particular time, but for a guy that's been under a lot of scrutiny and probably doubting himself a lot, this is a confidence booster for him.
Yeah, and, you know, in particular, you know, Mark, when we look at the two goals he was on for in the last game against Boston, you know, received a lot of criticism for the way he handled that, wasn't physical, looked a little lackadaisical. You know, I think it's important for him to exert himself here. And you know, he's been scratched once this year. He's been criticized, and we're only nine games into the season. And, you know, I think that the Leafs really are looking for him to take a step forward. And you know, it appears that they're going to give him that opportunity. I mean, to play 23 minutes tonight, that's a good night's worth of work for him. And you know, I think he can, you know, draw something on this. It's going to be a different task, even going to Columbus. You know, that's an improved team there. And obviously getting the Blackhawks here the following night. I mean, this is a bit of a, you know, with not trying to insult the Sabres too much, but it's a bit of a night off for the guys. And you know, it is something that they can build on, but they're going to have to be aware and get back to work with what's to come here. It's going to be tougher challenges for sure.
Now, I don't, you know, we talk too much about the fourth line, I always say, but I am going to talk about the fourth line. They played, you know, like 9, 10, 11 minutes. There was one particular shift they were hemmed in quite a bit, but I'm curious what you thought of Ponick and Holland and Matt Fratton.
Well, we certainly saw them more, which is, you know, I would think a positive. You know, we've heard some of the Leafs executives, you know, kind of allude in the last couple of days to the team needing to use four lines more often. And, you know, clearly that was part of the strategy in going and getting so many depth forwards this summer. And you know, we did see that a bit more tonight. I thought, you know, that they were creating a little bit. I mean, they were the same as everyone else in that, you know, that they were making positive influences for the most part when they were on the ice. And, you know, again, for them, it could be something that makes them feel good. You know, part of me wonders if we're talking fourth line, when Carter Ashton will ever be freed from jail, so to speak. I mean, it's now into 3 weeks or so the season's been on, and he's only been able to practice with the team and hasn't played a game. And, you know, you do wonder if he'll get in at some point here. But, you know, for the limited minutes those guys played, you know, I thought they were fine. And if they can continue to even generate a little bit of offensive zone time during the points when they're on the ice, that's something the Leafs can need and can use, because, you know, they need those guys in limited minutes to be making whatever positive contribution they can.
Chris, were you at all surprised that Jonathan Bernier got the start tonight? Obviously, we can't even, you know, basically comment on how Jonathan, you know, basically got back into the fray of things and acclimated himself very well after getting pulled to the Boston Bruins the other night. So it looks as though he'll be the starter in Columbus Friday night, and Randy will continue to basically not say and yet say that he is your number one goaltender.
Well, certainly it was a sign that that's where he's at in his mind, that you know, in starting Bernier in this game. You know, coming to the rink this morning, I did think it would be Reimer's start. Just with the way things have gone, and you know, I certainly don't hang the loss against the Bruins on Bernier. The team certainly didn't do enough in front of him to win that game. But you know, I did think he'd go to Reimer here tonight. And truth be told, as you mentioned, you know, whichever one had played, I think it was going to be a positive result for the Leafs. And you know, if I'm guessing though, now I would think he'll go to Reimer in Columbus and maybe save Bernier for the home game against Chicago. You know, that's just my feeling on it, but certainly I would expect that we'll see both of those guys in those two games, one or the other. And then, you know, the question would be, I guess, you know, where do you want your number one guy? And if Bernier's that guy, to me, you start him in the home game, the tougher game, maybe against the, you know, a team that really has a chance to win the Stanley Cup again this year.
Is there any debate at all that Sam Reinhart doesn't stay? I mean, do you think they could possibly keep him? I mean, there's no point, is there?
I'll be surprised if he's there, you know, tomorrow at this point. I mean, to be honest, I mean, this was a poisonous dressing room tonight, as you'd imagine, you know, for the Sabres. And you know, I think, you know, where he's at, that he hasn't probably shown enough to this point to really stand out to stay, but especially where the team is there. You know, there's not a lot of insulation for him. You know, I think it'd be a very difficult year to have to stay in Buffalo. And you know, I'm certain he wants to stay in the NHL. Any teenager would. You know, I do think the organization has already made up its mind before tonight's game to send him back. And in fact, you know, I would think after seeing them play as they did here tonight, that trip home will be coming very soon.
Chris, should we blame the Toronto media for not making any mention of Josh Georges coming in tonight and refusing to be traded to the Maple Leafs? And so nobody talked about it, wrote about it, and the Leaf fans did not even boo, which, you know, kind of was a little surprising on a side note.
Well, they didn't boo, but I saw a few articles about it. I mean, he was certainly asked about it this morning. And, you know, maybe a little bit, but you know, to me, this might be a blessing in disguise, to be honest. You know, I thought at the time, you know, trading Cody Franzen, which is, you know, who was going to go in the other direction, you know, I think that would have been a mistake, you know, with the benefit of hindsight. And you know, Josh Georges is a super stand-up guy, but he's got a few years left on his deal. I think he's a bit of a declining player, which is why Montreal was willing to let him go. And I still think Cody Franzen has a lot to give the Leafs. And this, you know, that old saying with the trades you don't make might be the best ones. You know, I think that could come into play here. And especially if he didn't want to play here, you know, he didn't feel comfortable being a Leaf and didn't like the role that the Leafs had described to him when they were trying to get him to waive his no trade. So, you know, let him go down the highway. And, you know, he was awfully frustrated today, I'm sure. And, you know, maybe somewhere in the back of his mind wondering if he made the right decision.
Well, yeah, a night like tonight certainly was great for Leaf fans. And like you say, I was saying to Ozzy, some of the seasons, and you would have been too young to remember, but in the early 80s, boy, when you have a, like, not a bad season, ugly season, it is long. And I heard one of the commentators say tonight, you know what, you think you know what to expect, but then when you're in it, you really didn't expect it to be as bad as it was. And this could be that kind of year for Buffalo.
Well, you know, I was texting with a scout that works for another team, a pro scout, and he was saying, and I think it's true, that this is a dangerous precedent. I mean, I understand the push for McDavid and Eichel, and if one or both of those guys becomes franchise talents and the Sabres have a resurgence, maybe we'll say this is all worth it. But, you know, to me, to put your players through this and some of the young guys on this team, it might be tough to recover from. There's no guarantees in this, and you know, clearly Buffalo's committed to this path. But when you see a night like tonight, you just wonder, how are these guys going to get through 72 more games? Because that's not a very good hockey team, and I would guess they're going to trade more veterans before it's over with. So, you know, it's going to be a long year down there on the other end of the QEW.
Well, the way we get through all our Leafs Nation postgame games as well, 70-plus, is guests like you. So thanks as always, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. We'll talk on Friday night.
Sounds good. Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca.
You know what, and based on what's going on thus far in the early going, I know you talked to Chris about this whole Connor McDavid or Eichel. I mean, both of those kids are going to be pretty good players. The one for sure is a franchise player. I don't know much about, you know, the other guy, McDavid.
Talk about Connor McDavid, yeah.
Right? And, but Carolina is playing in Vancouver, I do believe. And, you know, they have 2 points on the season thus far. The Sabres have doubled their output. Sabres have got 4 points. I just thought I'd let you know that. I believe Winnipeg has also won tonight, so they move up in the standings, and it's going to be a tough year for the Sabres and Carolina at best.
I got to get my bearings straight again, yeah, about the I mean, there is the lottery thing, and I'm trying to think when they added every, yeah, team. Did they skip another year that every team, every non-playoff team's eligible?
I think it's one more year, right?
One more year, yeah, because they didn't want them in this particular draft. They waited, but it will be, it's still the weighted lottery. So if you come dead last, you've got the best chance of getting them, but it's no guarantee. But then they also are going to, it used to be you could only move up a maximum of 4 spots. So if you were like 8th overall, you can only move up to, well, I think people out there can figure it out, to 4 and all that. But starting in 2016, it's kind of like NBA style. So the 14 teams that don't make the playoffs, team number 17 would have the most minute odds. But like the Orlando Magic did years ago when they got Shaquille O'Neal, they were like the best team out of the playoffs and won the longest of odds to get that lottery pick. So welcome back. We will talk more. We'll get the out-of-town scores as well. But the in-town score, the Toronto Maple Leafs defeat the Buffalo Sabres by a score of 4-0. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Welcome back, Leafs Nation Postgame. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne with you. Of course, Leafs Nation Postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 4-0 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Buffalo Sabres tonight. And we'll check in with Rob Wong, our Leaf reporter, in a few minutes' time as well. But Ozzy, the out-of-town scores to go over the many games that are going on out there. And, of course, you have become the king of out-of-town scores, haven't you?
Really?
Yes.
Is that what I have become? But
well, many other things.
Let me give you these out-of-town scores. These finals thus far, in the Minnesota Wild go into Boston and defeat the Boston Bruins 4-3. And goal scorers for Minnesota. And by the way, Gord, remember the other night when they gave up, I believe the Rangers scored 5 goals in the third period, right, to beat Minnesota?
That's correct, okay. Yeah. Did the same thing happen again?
No, Minnesota turned the tables on the Bruins. Bruins had a 3-1 lead going into the third. Minnesota scores 3 goals. Niederreiter gets his second, and in the third period, Parise with his fourth, Justin Fontaine with his first, and Marco Scandella gets his second. And for the Bruins, it was Seth Griffith with his third, and Milan Lucic with his second. Nick Backstrom gets the win for the Wild. Tuukka Rask takes the loss. In Long Island, the Winnipeg Jets go in and surprise.
That is a surprise.
The New York Islanders on 4-3 is the final score. The goal scorers for the Winnipeg Jets are Andrew Ladd with his third. Paul Postma gets his first. Jacob Trouba gets his first, and the winning goal in the third period is their captain, Andrew Ladd, gets his fourth goal of the season. So 2 goals on the night for Andrew Ladd. The Islander scores were Brock Nelson with his sixth. John Tavares, JT, as Nazem Kadri calls him, gets his fourth. And Mikhail Grabowski, back from his mild concussion, gets his third. Pavlik with the win. Yaroslav Halak takes the loss.
Do you think JT calls Nazem Kadri NK?
Probably just Nifty Mittens, right? Remember Brooke Pashley giving that nickname last year?
And well, Doc, we got some nifty reporting.
Do you not want the other scores?
Well, I do, but done? Not right now. Okay.
This went too long.
No, this is what luring people in to hear the second half of the out-of-town scoreboard, which... a lot of people didn't realize it's a 2-day affair now that Mark Osborne is doing it.
I've given you 2 out-of-town scores, and there's 5 other finals.
Can't wait. But Rob Wong, our man covering the Toronto Maple Leafs, the game tonight for Sportsnet 590, The Fan, joining Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne. Rob, I want to ask you just the building. We always talk about the building rocking or not rocking. It was not a very good Buffalo Sabre team, but certainly an impressive Leaf effort. Was the building rocking tonight, or how would you determine it?
I wouldn't say it was rocking. They were definitely much more pleased than they have been of late. There were no "Go Raptors, Go" chants or no jerseys being thrown on the ice. There were actually a couple of "Go Leafs, Go" chants, which is kind of surprising.
Rob, what about Dion Phaneuf? Any jeering for Dion Phaneuf? What about when Naz took him out in the second period there? It looked as though he did something to his knee ligaments. Lo and behold, he's out there for the third period and finished the hockey game.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of fans that were kind of scared as to what might happen with Dion Phaneuf. I mean, you just look at the replays, and it did not look good at all. But the guy comes out for the third. Randy Carlyle saying after the game that it was actually something to do with his hip. I guess he kind of popped it when Kadri hit him on that bump there by Marcus Foligno. But it looks like Dion definitely avoided a pretty massive injury. So that's definitely a good sign for the Leafs.
Well, you know, when you talk about when I was asking about the crowd as well, I did notice the start of the second period. And we talk about it every game, how many empty seats there were down in those good seats or people arriving late or what have you. But I got the feeling from a Leaf point of view, Rob, you those kind of games when you're just dominating, running into a hot goaltender and the other team scores the first goal, quite often they can go south in a hurry. But it just seemed the Leafs just started to breathe and relax and have fun and almost were like the Harlem Globetrotters against the Washington Generals in the third period.
Yeah, I kind of likened it on Twitter to, watching Canada play Latvia back in Sochi, you know, a couple of months ago, and Canada's dominating the play. And then you're thinking, oh, God, if Latvia scores one goal here, that's going to be it. And I'm sure that's what a lot of Leafs fans were thinking here, that, you know, that's so Leafs. I mean, they dominate the play and then, you know, a goofy goal goes in. They're down a goal and then, you know, things just snowball from there and the Leafs end up losing this game. But luckily they were able to get one past Michael Neuwehr there late in the second on a nice look like a design play there by Tyler Bozak, and then the floodgates open there to start the third, and you know, Phil Kessel's banking shots off Neuwehr, and you know, Morgan Riley makes a nice pass to James Van Riemsdyk, and Jake Gardner with a nice little wrap around there. And I mean, you could just tell, you know, right after this game in the room, definitely a much happier team. It was definitely much more light, that's for sure.
Rob, Joffrey Lupo for me impressed certainly early. He had 9 shots on net with his final total. He did not key in on any of the scoring, and yet a stand-up guy who really addressed the media after the loss to the Boston Bruins looked as though the change in getting Phil Kessel as a winger really seemed to ignite him.
Yeah, and talking to Joffrey this morning, I mean, you know, one of the first things he came out and said is we just want to play a game that we're proud of, you know, as a team. And it really seemed like he took that to heart. I mean, he was just coming out like gangbusters to start this game. And that first period, he was the most noticeable guy on the ice. You could, you know, argue that, you know, this could be his best game of the season. And, you know, that line of Kadri, Lupul, and Kessel early on, you could tell there was definitely some jump. And obviously the familiarity with playing with Kessel in the past was huge tonight. And that line was, you know, clearly the Leafs' best line this evening.
Yeah, I guess the challenge now is this was just what the doctor ordered. It's just that their lows have to be less severe, particularly their lows, these games that have troubled them at home.
Definitely. And I think what I liked about tonight's effort is that, you know, it was sustained over a long period of time. There weren't very many, you know, lulls throughout this game. Now, granted, it is the Buffalo Sabres, of course, and, you know, maybe against a more talented team, there would have been a little bit more defensive zone pressure by the visitors. But, you know, as the guys, you know, kept saying after this game, and Randy Carlyle kind of echoed it, you know, they need to be able to put together, you know, consistent efforts for a full 60 minutes. They can't have lapses like we've seen throughout this year that they're, you know, consistently inconsistent, I guess, is the way you might want to put it with this team. But that's definitely one thing that stood out tonight, that for, you know, for the most part of this game, the offensive play and the defensive play was very consistent.
Rob, the Buffalo Sabres played their 10th game tonight. They've scored 11 goals on the season thus far. And I don't know how Ted Nolan, I mean, he's a motivating type of guy. I mean, he's a player's coach that inspires his team. I don't know what he's going to have to do for the remaining parts of this season, because it's not looking very pretty for them moving forward.
No, it definitely isn't. And I mean, you feel so bad for the people in Buffalo, and God, you feel bad for the reporters that kind of have to cover this team on a night in, night out basis, because there's just been some, you know, really ugly hockey games for this team this year. And you got to feel bad for Ted Nolan. I mean, he's in such a tough spot with this rebuilding that the Sabres are going through. And you look at the young guys on this team, and even some of the veteran guys, you know, you look at a Tyler Myers, for example, you know, just not playing to the capability that we've seen them, you know, in the past. And it's a tough situation. You get into these games where you're only getting 10 shots on net. You're scoring barely a goal a game. I mean, it's got to be hard to get up for games night in and night out. And especially knowing the circumstances with your team that you are in a rebuilding situation, it's really hard to watch.
And I get the Maple Leafs, the fourth line, had to be happy they got some minutes. What did you think of them all in all? Again, it's not the best of competition, but at least they saw the ice.
Yeah, for sure. And then we saw, you know, on that penalty kill there with Peter Holland getting hooked by Andre Mazaros, a nice play there that allowed JVR to get a breakaway. Richard Ponick drove the net a couple of times, had a shot on net. So, you know, they definitely made an impact in this game with the little ice time that they had. You know, still a little disappointing that, you know, Carter Ashton wasn't able to draw into tonight's game and see a little ice time, especially in a game like this against a team like the Buffalo Sabres. But, you know, all in all, I thought they did their job for sure with the limited ice time that they had.
Rob, the Leafs, with 10 seconds to go in the second period, Tyler Bozak gets that first goal. It's a power play goal. And, you know, over the course of time, I know he had 19 goals last year. He's not usually a guy that looks to shoot first. And maybe it was kind of a blessing in disguise that he was on that partial breakaway and he had to shoot the puck. So good on Tyler Bolzak. The power play finally connects after, you know, quite a lengthy drought.
Yeah, for sure. And we talked to some of the guys after and got their thoughts on, you know, maybe if the man advantage took a step forward tonight. And, you know, they obviously got some of the bounces their way. We talked about that play, and it seemed like a designed play to get Tyler Bozak, maybe not on an entire breakaway, but, you know, the puck went in the net nonetheless. But it's clear that the team, you know, still needs to get some more consistency, you know, on the man advantage. They've been working on drills over the last, you know, several practices, trying to figure out some sort of a combination, some sort of a strategy to get the puck in the net. So, you know, it's good that they get one tonight to kind of get off the schneid and maybe get some positive momentum moving forward.
Rob, great job as always. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, no problem, guys.
Rob Wong covering the Toronto Maple Leafs for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I did an article on sportsnet.ca about their home ice woes. I did actual research, Ozzy.
You wrote an article?
I wrote. And wow. They were one before tonight, 1-4-0 in their five games at home this season, correct?
Correct.
Three of the four games had been
clunkers.
Clunkers. Like
effortless.
Clunkers.
Effortless.
Terrible.
Brutal.
Brutal. Brutal. Brutal. Brutal. Then you look at their last game last year against Winnipeg. And that was their last home game. And you remember before they had three road games, they still had a chance to get in the playoffs. And Dion Phaneuf said he thought they had intensity after. Remember that, because we talked to you that night. And so it's really like 1-5-1 in their last seven overall, four of them being clunkers. And then you get, or 1-5-0. And then I look back, they're 3-10-1 before tonight in their last 14 home games. And this is a team that made home ice sing since the lockout. They've done pretty well at home. 3-10-1 when all that happened. So anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, just an interesting article on sportsnet.ca.
Yeah, you know what? And maybe this is a blessing in disguise too, Gord, that they're, you know, rough start, because they've started pretty well the last few years, right?
Yeah.
They've gotten off to good start, and it's been the decline in March and April.
And well, so, and then people wondered last year, the 2 years ago with the 48-game season, they were running out of gas. And sure enough, last year that theory held up. So their challenge is to make their final 20 games solid heading into the playoffs. Let's get back to the out-of-town scores. Got about 4 minutes before the next break.
Okay, give us two, we need five more. Philadelphia in overtime defeats
Los
Angeles 3-2. It's Braden Schenn gets the winner in overtime. The other scores for Philadelphia, Michael Raffo with his fifth of the season, and Chris Vandervelde, not relationed to the
golfer, yeah,
gets his first of the season. Tyler Toffoli gets his fifth for the Kings, as does Mike Richards gets his first for Los Angeles. In Pittsburgh, a wild one, 8-3, Pittsburgh defeats New Jersey. For the Penguins, Como with his second, Evgeny Malkin his fourth, Hornquist gets his fifth, Craig Adams his first, Crosby gets his sixth and seventh, Pascal Dupuis gets his fourth, and Steve Downey replies with his first of the season. For New Jersey, Zubrus with his second, Como with his second, Josephson with his first, and Tuomurutu with his second. Moving on to Columbus, it's 5-2 Ottawa. The Sens, the red-hot Sens.
Wow.
Win 5-2. MacArthur with his third, Zach Smith his second. Eric Karlsson gets his third. Chiasson, he's the guy in the Spezza deal, gets his third. And Clark MacArthur gets his fourth. For Columbus, David Savard gets his second, and Cam Atkinson his fourth. Robert Lehner takes the win. You know the Leafs score. And in Tampa Bay, 7-3 final. Tampa Bay beats Arizona. And for the Lightning, Kucherov gets a hat trick in the game, his second, third, and fourth. Also for Tampa Bay, Brian Boyle gets his second and third. Brian Boyle and Matt Carl gets his first. For Arizona, it was Martin Irat with his third, and B.J. Crombien with his first. Mike Smith gets the loss again. Devin Dubnyk comes in to replace him, and Ben Bishop gets the win for Tampa Bay.
Boy, you know, anyways, we take a look at the out-of-town scores. A lot of action, it seems, going on every night. And the Leafs, you know, a bounce back. It's funny. It's been a very up-and-down type season for the Leafs right now so far in their first few games. How about the Edmonton Oilers? I mean, about a week ago, you're thinking, and hey, not thinking, it could have been reality, one more loss, and there could have been some serious tinkering done, and then all of a sudden you get on a four-game winning streak, and nothing cures all ills like that, and just see if the Oilers now, have they really turned the corner or not?
Remains to be seen. I will wait before I give you my honest opinion. Is that okay?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Because I kind of laugh about everybody and how they've won four in a row, and it was about 10 days ago that the same people were just saying all sorts of negative things, and then four wins later, they're saying things completely different. So what's changed? So well, I don't want to be one of those guys.
I can remember.
I'm going to call a spade a spade.
I can remember being with a guy, a noted media guy, and I was doing some Sportsnet panels here, and the Leafs were on a hot streak, and he was saying they've got to get John Ferguson Jr. under contract. And I'm not knocking, I'm just saying, you know, and then all of a sudden 2 weeks later, they're calling for his head again. So, I mean, you've got to be consistent with what you think through thick and thin, rather than, oh my God, we got to sign him up. Then 2 weeks later, he's an idiot again, not a genius. So
yeah. We
shall find out what gives there. When we come back, we'll hear from Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle. We'll talk a little bit about Mr. Hockey. You were part of the Red Wing organization, and certainly everyone's thoughts with the Howe family. Gordie Howe suffering a serious stroke earlier today. We'll chat about that, but we'll talk about a 4-0 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Buffalo Sabres. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame. brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Well, fun night at Air Canada Center as we welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne with you. Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Of course, we're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 4-0, the shutout for Jonathan Bernier, the win over the Buffalo Sabres. And, you know, chatting earlier with Chris Johnson, and you asked him the question about goaltender. And I was curious which way Randy Carlyle was going to go. This might be the one that he has indicated that Bernier is the number one goaltender, choosing in this very important game to win, and really could have gone either way tonight. He went with Bernier. Were you surprised by that at all?
In some ways, I was surprised, having gotten pulled and, James Reimer, having the better record and James usually playing well at home. I mean, having the only home ice win, James was in net, for the Maple Leafs. But then after giving it more thought, I thought, okay, back-to-back nights coming up Friday, Saturday. You got the big Blackhawks coming into town on Saturday night. I don't think that he's going to now go back to Bernier on Friday night because I think he'll get the Saturday night start. So if you went with Reimer here, does that mean you're going Reimer again on Friday night? Because they were going to win the hockey game tonight, right? So
well, they beat San Jose before.
There's some logic to that thinking, we'll get Reimes in. Bernier's played the last two now, and Bernier is going to get the majority of the games unless, he just simply is not up to par like we think he can be.
Right? It's as we look at the Buffalo team, because you just allude to it, a game that you expect to win. I'm trying to think how bad they are. I mean, again, there's 70 plus games still to be played, but teams that have come dead last the last number of years, it's been the Edmonton Oilers, by and large, that have done it for a great number of years, but I'm curious, tell me a team in recent history that you remember being as bad as this Buffalo Sabre team theoretically could be. I mean, what is it? One of the Edmonton teams or something? Like, what's happened the last few years? A team that really stunk and really stood out as far as their abysmal record. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head.
Well,
because Edmonton,
we can go to South Florida there for a bit. We can go to Long Island there for a bit. I mean, Edmonton probably is the one. Calgary, and yet Calgary doesn't necessarily come across that way because they work hard. I mean, that's what we give them credit for.
Well, and even like right now, this Buffalo team isn't dead last in points, as you said. I mean, if the draft were to be held today,
Carolina is in last place, right?
Well, let's hear from Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle after the game, and then we'll divert to another topic for a bit and come back and talk more about the Toronto Maple Leafs Buffalo Sabres. But Randy Carlyle seemed like he was under siege and interrogation last time when they had the abysmal effort on Saturday. Not the case tonight, a 4-0 shutout win over the Buffalo Sabres. Here's Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle after the game.
Randy, the players and you had said you wanted a performance you could be proud of. Clearly, mission accomplished there. What do you take from this game?
Well, again, it's one where, the message is now that you've been able to prove to us that you can play a game that we needed to play, that we have to play, a style that we have to play with the commitment to the little things in the game, that now our expectations are to carry that on to the next one. And for us to recognize that there are certain things that we've been doing out there that were much a big or a drastic difference tonight than what we were on Saturday night and the night before that. So again, it's just a recognition of how hard it is and how easy it can be if we stick to a game plan. Now, the easy part is because we were able to do it one night, doesn't mean the next night's going to be easy. We know that we're going to have to play as we go forward to a higher level than we did tonight. Tonight everything fell our way, and we'll take it because we're in drastic need of a performance at home.
Is there a nervous time in that game when you're absolutely dominating but not scoring?
For sure. When it's nothing, and I think we had our 27th shot before we scored. So those are nervous times because you know that sometimes fate in sports comes and bites you the wrong way, and that was what we were worried about. You'll question that all the time.
They talked about being smarter with the puck. Is that something you stressed?
Well, we stressed that. Believe me, it's not the first time we've stressed it. You know, this is game, nine for us? Eight, nine? You know, and we've stressed that right from the beginning of the year, but it just seemed that in some of the situations that we've been in, that we haven't committed ourselves or haven't committed to what the team needs you to do to have success.
Did you like the new line combination?
Yes.
You think that worked?
Yeah. I think it, you know, for some, looking at it, offensive zone time and shots, and the way our club played it, you know, I thought the line combinations were a bonus. You know, with Bozak scored, Van Riemsdyk scored. You know, they were, you know, opportunistic. Phil scored, you know, a goal scorer's goal from behind the net. You know, that's the kind of stuff that you look for, and you need that. We need that in the situation that we're in.
You see a step forward for the power play?
Well, we had lots of offensive zone time. I still don't think we shot the puck enough. I think that we vacated the front of the net when we had opportunities to shoot the puck, and we let never see a lot of pucks on the power play. And it'll be something we'll continue to work on. And as I stated, I think it was this morning, talking about the power play, that we have four staples like everybody else does too, and that we have to establish that shot. You have to have net presence, you have to have puck recovery, and our work ethic has to be one where you're going to outwork the penalty-killing unit you're playing against.
Was Dion okay after that collision there?
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised that he didn't have any. He wasn't any worse for wear. Little bit of a pop in his hip, and he was right back. It looked a lot worse, to tell you the truth. On the replay, when I saw it in between periods, I said, "Holy crow, what's this?"
Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle, "Holy crow, what's this?" And it looked serious. The hit to Dion. We all are amateur doctors. There, you're actually a guy, Ozzie, that's played. And what was your thinking about it when you saw it?
Well, you know what? When I did see it, I thought it was his knee ligament for sure. You know, the way that, you know, he just stretched there at that point. I mean, you know, to think that it was a hip. But I can tell you one thing for certain, Gord. The Leafs do not play until Friday. Dion, it's going to be a little painful tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to go on the ice tomorrow, right?
Everything like that a day later is when it happens. We're going to hear a little bit from Phil Kessel, Jake Gardner as well. Fun night for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Buffalo Sabres, a 4-0 shutout victory. Did want to bring up, it's not a fun night in hockey in general. And the latest quote from Dr. Murray Howe, and we all know, of course, Mark and Marty so well. And I can remember the Howe family Christmas card years ago. They used to send one of those big cards out and talked about the kids and then said, Murray scoring his goals in medical school. I remember that way back when. So they have a daughter as well, but he is a doctor as well as being one of the children of Gordie Howe. Talked about him having a serious stroke earlier today. A quote from Dr. Murray Howe saying, "This is the biggest hit he's ever had. It's going to be tough to recover from. I'd be surprised if he pulls out of it because it's such a severe stroke. God willing, he will. We're expecting the worst, but hoping for the best." So, Gordie Howe, serious stroke today. We'd seen him the past number of or year or so. I mean, at the outdoor the Winter Classic, struggling in a lot of ways, but he really wanted to get out there. I mean, he went to Saskatoon for the Memorial Cup. He, you know, went to the Winter Classic. He did all these things. He loved the fact that it was his grandkids that basically handled things for him. He really loved that those kids were helping him with the appearances and everything. And he had been at home for so many years with his wife when she was suffering from Pick's disease, a form of Alzheimer's. So he had to stay home with Colleen. And then when she passed away, he kind of got to get out a bit, but certainly you're part of the Red Wing organization, and that talk about synonymous with that organization and Mr. Hockey.
Yeah, you know what? And, you know, I certainly remember my first few years. I mean, we're dating ourselves now, Gordon. I mean, my first year with the Red Wings was back in the 81-82 season. You know, and it was kind of really ironic and almost embarrassing, you know, for me, is that I went in as a 20-year-old. I was fortunate enough to play with some, you know, a good journeyman centerman with by the name of Walt McKechnie. Mm-hmm. I ended up leading the Red Wings in scoring my rookie season, you know, 26 goals, 67 points. And then Mike Ilitch buys the team the following summer. And Jimmy DeVolano comes in to be the general manager. And I don't know if they just, you know, wanted to promote some of the younger players, change it around a little bit, but I got a huge, huge banner put up in the foyer at Joe Louis Arena, and my image, my picture, I mean, you can imagine it was at least 30 feet high.
Wow.
Right beside Gordie Howe. It's like, I go, this is, we got to get that down, right? And it was up there until I got traded. But you know, that was Gordie Howe. And funny enough, you know, when you talk about the Alumni Association, you know, that the NHL alumni is now, you know, a real good family, Leaf alumni as well. The Red Wing players, we never saw like Alex Delvecchio, never saw Gordie Howe. I mean, those guys almost as though that they disappeared and they weren't welcome back. It was kind of weird as I think about it right now, that how much a part of these organizations that the alumni are so important, and you bring them back, you parade them out, and you do winter games, and you honor the past players of an iconic organization. But I never had a chance during my 2 years in Detroit to get to meet and talk to Gordie Howe.
Well, I think because Ozzy, you look at it, and it's even like when the Montreal Forum closed and you saw the tears in Rocket Richard's eyes because there'd been a falling out years earlier, and that brought that full circle. And in Gordie Howe's case, there had been a falling out. So when you were playing with the Red Wings, he probably was still playing with the Hartford Whalers or was around, and that was a problem. And, you know, the movie written about it, that he felt he was taken advantage of at the end. Then they gave him an office job, which was no job at all. And he, to his credit, went on and carved a whole new path playing in the World Hockey Association, playing with his two sons, Mark and Marty, and then coming back at age 50 and playing a season or two in the NHL. Now, seeing him at the Winter Classic, these things did come full circle a bit, yeah. But it's more guys like Ted Lindsay that really got more embraced by the alumni.
But isn't it ironic, though, except for the Rangers and Montreal, like Chicago dropped the ball on a lot of their older players until, you know, Bill Wirtz left, right? And Rocky came back. They brought those guys back. Same thing here in Toronto.
Bill Wirtz left, yeah. Passed away.
No. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, same thing happened
Bill
here
Wirtz
in Toronto with Harold.
Building.
Harold, you know, the older players were not necessarily welcome back for a time.
Yes, that's
right?
True.
Until Cliff Fletcher, you know, came back. Same thing in Detroit. So it's interesting.
You got to
right?
give somebody else credit before Cliff Fletcher. Don Giffen always has to get credit.
Yes.
Don Giffen, the short time he was owner,
right.
He really did that in a big way about trying to get guys back. But you're right. It was, it just was a different time then. And unfortunate time. So it's nice to see them, you know, being embraced, but especially the big names. I mean, you love all the guys, the foot soldiers, but you also like the big names, the stars as well.
But the big names that had to move on, right? So in Detroit, it was Gordy. In Toronto, it was Dave Keon.
Yeah.
In Boston, it was Phil Esposito. You know, like those guys that moved on. Or
Bobby Orr moved on. You know, Bobby Hall went to the World Hockey Association from the Chicago Blackhawks. Right. And Guy Lafleur moved on. I mean, Well, now everybody moves on.
Yeah.
I mean, now everybody moves on. So, I mean, it's kind of a business that you work for three or four companies, being three or four teams for the average guy now.
But we are talking about the cream of the crop at the NHL level. And yes, it did happen to Gretzky. Of course, it happened to Messier, but it's still very nostalgic for me to know that even in my generation, Steve Yzerman played his entire career in Detroit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, is that going to happen for Crosby? You would assume that it will, you know? And, you know, some of these other guys like, you know, Steve Stamkos, you know, the next.
I don't know. I mean, like Ray Bourque, everyone kind of accepted there was unique circumstances why he played in Colorado. Mike Modano and Brian Leetch looked like they were going to be career guys, and they played a little bit somewhere else at the end. I think Mike Richter played his whole career with the Rangers, but he had some injury issues at the end. But I think he.
Well, what did Mike Modano do? Go to Detroit for the last hurrah because he was a, you know, right? Isn't that right?
Well, unfortunately, Oz,
he's a Michigan kid or
Michigan
whatever.
Kid, and also Michigan money. Like it's not like in Gordy's era, whatever he made, he could go to the front office and make half that amount. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's anyway. That is the. Story out there, and again, the latest quotes by his son, also a doctor, Dr. Murray Howe, again, that they are fearing the worst, and we certainly extend our thoughts out to the Howe family in that regard. Get back to the Leaf game, hear from some of the other principals in tonight's game, and, you know, Phil Kessel scored a goal that he doesn't play the way Gordy Howe did or any stretch of the imagination, but they both score a lot of goals. This one was a little bit different, a little bit unique and creative. He banked it in off the goaltender, Michael Neuvirth, had it from the side of the net, behind the net. Perfect shot that way. Let's hear from Phil Kessel after tonight's win.
I thought we played pretty well tonight, and you know, it was a good win for us.
Did you play the bank perfectly?
Get lucky once in a while.
Is that ping pong coming through there?
You know, just throwing in front and fortunately hit off him.
Did you see anything, or was it literally just no one else is really close, so give it a shot?
Sometimes you get lucky, right?
When the pressure builds like that, is it a game like that necessary to kind of ease some of it?
I don't know if there's pressure in a game like that. You know, what were we, 3-4-1? You know, got ourselves back to .500 now, and hopefully keep going.
Did you say you were fortunate or you got lucky sometimes, but is that exactly what you were thinking, backing that off the back of his?
You know, just throwing it out there and, you know, hoping it it went in.
What's going through your mind when you're dominating possession and outshooting them and it just stays scoreless for the longest time?
You know, you just got to stick with it, right? I thought we stuck with it, you know, and then eventually it breaks and, you know, we're able to get a couple goals after that.
How good are you guys up front when the defense is chipping in the way they did offensively tonight?
Yeah, I think we played pretty well as a team tonight, both offensively and defensively, and hopefully just keep that up.
Is there any disappointment you and Tyler obviously played for a while, a change of line?
You know, things will change all year. So it's, you know, we got to win, and that's the most important thing.
How did you feel it worked with Awesome? And obviously you played with Loops before.
Yeah, I thought we were all right. We had some chances. You know, we could have buried a couple, but they just didn't go in.
Do you feel like the power play took a step forward as well tonight? Or?
You know, we still have some work to do there. You know, we could use a couple more bounces out there. You know, we got some time.
Well, Phil Kessel, and big night for the Leafs, big night for the Kansas City Royals as they'll get set for a Game 7, and we'll have all that action tomorrow on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Yeah, what'd you think from Kessel? I don't know if he had any nuggets to say, or what did you think?
Well, you know what? If you read into what he said, you know, this is not going to stay like this for forever. It's going to change back. I mean, I heard what he said, meaning I can't wait to get back with Tyler. It's really, really what he said. And you know what? I give Nazem Kadri some credit tonight, Gord, because I thought he was as creative as I seen him be. As a Leaf centerman with both Kessel and Lupul as his line mates. And again, I caution myself because it was the Buffalo Sabres. And if we're going to put Kessel with Kadri and Lupul again in that role, I would like to see, okay, how now would you play against a team like the Chicago Blackhawks? And how would you play without the puck? And would you be able to generate and create a lot of stuff? Because you know, that's the part that I want to see.
I want to ask you, what was a line that you were most disappointed that got broken up?
That I played with
with? The gem line, I'm trying to think if it got broken up or did you guys just get traded? Is that what happened?
Yeah, we got traded. I mean, how could you break, you know, a line that was pretty successful? You know what? I'll have to come back to you on that
okay.
one. I'll give it thought for another time.
Okay, sounds
you know,
good.
Throughout my career, but certainly getting traded to Winnipeg and playing with Eddie Olchuk and then getting separated from him a little bit, I ended up playing with Stu Barnes and Paul McDermott. And it's like, okay, you know? Okay, you know what
well,
I'm saying?
Okay, you know. I know. How about okay, you know? Jake Gardner, that's what he kind of said. Okay, you know, I'm going to get this goal and put the cherry on the sundae. Here he is, goal scorer tonight after tonight's 4-0 win.
Yeah, that was nice to get the first one of the year. I don't know, I didn't really see anywhere to shoot, so I ended up just skating around the net, and it was open. So it was nice to get that first goal.
Yeah, we thought it might have been just patience, but you showed it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great pass by Winnie there, and the goalie made a great play right away and took away the net, and so I had to bring her on the net, and I think he was out of his crease, so he was fortunate there.
What did you like about the team's play in its own zone here tonight to limit the opposition to what you did?
Yeah, that was huge. We played a great team game tonight, and you can see when we play like that, we're a good hockey team, and you know, wasn't many selfish plays, not many one-on-one plays, and I got the puck deep, went to work, and like I said, it shows. You know, we'll be successful if we keep doing those things.
Jake, a lot of guys this morning talked about a response game after what happened Saturday. Were you really looking for 1-2 because you had a rough night Saturday as well?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't play well as a team. I obviously didn't play well, and that was huge for us to come out here tonight and kind of get a, you know, jump start to hopefully a good weekend here too.
You just missed one against Boston the other night. Now maybe get a chance to see one go in, and maybe a few more will go in as well.
Yeah, I hopefully I have to start shooting the puck a little bit more. So that's the first step, though, yeah, for sure.
Well, Jake Gardner, and quite the entertaining goal tonight. And we talked earlier about Phil Kessel. Let's hear from Tyler Bozak, his, I don't know if they're still roommates or not, or live together, but former line mates for a game, and Morgan Riley after tonight's game.
Tyler, Randy changed the lines up today, and obviously you guys had some success. How did you feel about the changes and how you guys played with the new line mates?
Yeah, I mean, I think whenever things aren't going well, you got to make changes. Our team wasn't playing very well as a group, so changes are to be made. And I thought they played well as a line, and I thought our line, you know, sustained a lot of zone time too and played pretty well. So it was nice to, you know, have a full team effort tonight.
Morgan, what's going through your mind when the game is, you know, you're dominating possession, you're out shooting them, but it stays 0-0 for it seems like the longest time?
I think you just got to keep it going. You know, it was a close game for a while there, and just a good team game. You know, keep playing well, keep skating hard, keep trying to create chances, and just keep with it. And you know, if you keep going, chances will keep coming. And you know, just got to bury one, and then just keep going from there.
Tyler, on a night where their goaltender was really playing well, what did you see on the breakaway?
I mean, I just saw a little opening in the bottom corner, and I mean, luckily it went in. Phil made a great play to me, and I was able to walk in all alone. So, I mean, it was nice to get one by him. He played pretty well at the start of the game. I thought we had a lot of chances as a team, and I think it kind of opened up a bit for us after that.
Tyler, does it get a bit nerve-wracking when you're out shooting a team so drastically and it's still 0-0?
I mean, not tonight. I think, you know, it was a game where we needed to play a lot better, and we felt confident after the first period of how we were playing, and knew we just needed to keep playing like that, and eventually, you know, one was going to go in for us.
Guys, what are the difference one night to the next? The flash performance Saturday, a great performance tonight. What's the difference either emotionally or physically or mentally for you guys when you take the ice?
You know, I think tonight, I think we all knew that we had to play a good team game. You know, we had to bounce back. We're not happy with how we played two games ago. You know, so we had the confidence, and, you know, you know, quick start helps always. You know, I thought we played well all night, though. You know, got chances, but we knew that, you know, we had to kind of turn it around a little bit and, you know, start playing our game. And, you know, I think we're able to do that here tonight.
Tyler Bozak, Morgan Riley after tonight's 4-0 victory. And we'll see what they could do the next two games. By the way, all that action will be on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So we'll be busy, guys, with Leafs Nation pregame, the intermissions, and Leafs Nation postgame as well as they head to Columbus Friday. And are you going to wear a Halloween costume here? What do you think Friday night?
If you'd like me to, Gord, I will try to come up with something. If you do, I will.
Okay. And then Saturday, the Chicago Blackhawks, one of their biggest wins last year at Air Canada Center, will be here on a Saturday as well. But tonight, there was joy in Leaf Nation, joy at Air Canada Center. The woeful Buffalo Sabres in town, but give the Leafs credit, a 4-0 shutout victory over Buffalo. You've been listening to Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.